For Pacifica Radio, March the 21st, 2024. I'm Scott Horton. This is Anti-War Radio. All right, y'all, welcome to the show. It is Anti-War Radio. I'm your host, Scott Horton. I'm author of the book, Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism, and I'm working on Provoked, How Washington Started the New Cold War with Russia and the Catastrophe in Ukraine. You can find my full interview archive, more than 6,000 of them now, going back to 2003, at scotthorton.org and at youtube.com/scotthortonshow. And introducing today's first guest, it's the great Kyle Anzalone, news editor at The Institute and opinion editor at antiwar.com. Welcome back to the show, Kyle. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, Scott. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Really great to have you back on. So you had this piece at the Libertarian Institute. Physicians describe most appalling atrocities in Gaza that you co-wrote with Will Porter there. Please fill us in, sir.
Yeah, Scott. So there was a 1 hour interview of four doctors who have recently been in Gaza. And not only are these physicians, but these are physicians who are the heads of different medical groups that operate in Gaza and have spent years operating in Gaza from time to time. And so one of the doctors had like over 15 years of experience doing operations in Gaza. And so these are people very, very familiar with the Strip and with Palestinians. And they were all just horrified at what they had seen in Gaza, saying it was the worst conditions that they have seen. One doctor said that he was still waking up in the middle of the night, basically in terror of what he had seen, and just abysmal conditions. One doctor reported that I want to read his quote here because I thought it was really powerful. He said, "One child that I will never forget had burned so bad that you could see her facial bones. We knew there was no chance of her surviving, but that there was also no morphine to give her. So not only was she going to die, but she was going to die in agony. And what was even worse was that there was nowhere for her to go and die. So she was just left on the floor of the emergency department to die." And that's just one story. I've seen multiple stories like that.
Yeah, it's absolutely sickening. Is there any, are they even discussing in DC or Tel Aviv about why they're preventing morphine and anesthesia and this most basic things for these people? I mean, I know they're deliberately killing them. I'm not stupid, but, the situation that you just described. Why not let her have some morphine? And I mean the Israelis and the Americans, because they're the ones deciding whether she gets some or not.
Right. So, the doctors complained about this during the panel, but this has been well documented throughout. The head of UNRWA had recently said that the Israeli restrictions on aid entering Gaza is so severe, they're now taking scissors out of children's medical kits. And everything is under the name of dual use, right? So if anything could possibly be used by Hamas, and that includes antibiotics, that includes morphines and other sedatives, they said, a lot of people in Gaza have very, very serious burns or amputations. And these aren't things that you have one surgery on. It requires a lot of very intensive medical care over days, or else you're not going to survive it. You're going to get an infection, and that's eventually going to kill you. And so without antibiotics and without sedatives to put people to sleep, to do these very agonizing procedures day after day, it is creating these, post-apocalyptic conditions in Gaza. Even on our TV shows portraying the apocalypse, Scott, they have access to gauze and bandages. But I've read multiple reports, and these doctors talked about rewashing surgical gloves because there's no more gloves, washing and reusing gauze because there's no bandages whatsoever. Imagine having people show up to the hospital with serious injuries, needing amputation, and not even being able to put bandages over their wounds.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And this term dual use, imagine taking that term and changing it from something could be used for an innocent purpose or could be used as a weapon or to make weapons, right? Here, they've changed the definition to mean Hamas could use it, not as a weapon, but as a sedative for themselves, as anesthesia for themselves. That's what makes it dual use. You can't weaponize morphine.
Right. And you know, adding to the complications here, Scott, too, say you have a truck full of medical supplies prepared to enter Gaza. And then at the last inspection, the Israelis find a pair of scissors, you know, some antibiotics or something like that. It's not that they just take this off of the truck and allow the rest of the truck to go through. All of that aid has to go through the entire inspections process again. And, you know, time and time again, we've seen the photos and we've heard even U.S. senators complain that there's miles of trucks lined up waiting to enter Gaza, and they can't because either the Israeli protesters, the Israeli inspections, the lack of fuel, just so many problems preventing this from moving forward at all.
It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton talking with Kyle Anzalone from the Institute and Antiwar.com about Israel's genocide against the helpless Palestinians in Gaza. And, you know, Kyle, let me ask you something. If I told you that Israeli civilian protesters are blocking aid trucks and they're blocking them with a big fun camp out and bouncy houses and cotton candy and their own little carnival for their kids to prevent food and medicine from getting to the poor Palestinians, well, you would call me a damn liar because that's completely crazy. That can't be right, right?
No, that, I mean, that's what's going on, and it's well documented, especially in Israeli media. You know, this isn't something that's getting a whole lot of attention in the U.S. media, but this is something that has been documented. And even U.S. officials, including in the State Department, have kind of had mealy-mouthed statements about how, oh, well, the Israelis are kind of trying to do something about these protesters, but not really. You know, one really important point I want to make here, Scott, and this is something that Dr. Menard, one of the doctors in that panel, brought up, is that it really doesn't matter if Israel increases the amount of aid that they're allowing into Gaza at this point, because there's no way to distribute it. And so it can't get to the people it needs to get to. It can't, medical supplies can't get to the hospital if the trucks can't drive there. And just this past week, we saw Israel target not only humanitarian aid workers, just civilians, but also police officers who were escorting the aid trucks in northern Gaza and just making it impossible to transit aid anywhere in the strip. And so even if the number, you know, the big White House policy here is, oh, we're trying to get more aid into Gaza, and they're saying it doesn't matter if the number of trucks goes up if you can't distribute it to where it needs to go anyways. And that's the situation that they're currently facing. And they're saying there needs to be an immediate ceasefire, which is, you know, the one consensus in Washington is the thing that we can't have.
Hold on just one sec. We got to make some money here. Man, Starbucks' support for Israel's ethnic cleansing campaign is almost disgusting as their coffee. Don't you just hate them? You, me, and a lot of other people, too. It's time to boycott and divest from those genocidal blood-drinking traitors at Starbucks. But you're still going to need your caffeine in the morning. Well, you guys are going to love Mundo's coffee. It's so good, and the price is right. Check out a massive variety of awesome-tasting coffees at mundosartisancoffee.com. You'll be glad you did. That's mundosartisancoffee.com. Hey guys, I had some wasps in my house, so I shot them to death with my trusty Bug Assault 3.0 model with the improved salt reservoir and bar safety. I don't have a deal with them, but the show does earn a kickback every time you get a Bug Assault or anything else you buy from Amazon.com by way of the link in the right-hand margin on the front page at scotthorton.org. So keep that in mind. And don't worry about the mess. Your wife will clean it up. Well, folks, sad to say, they lied us into war. All of them. World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq War I, Serbia, Afghanistan, Iraq War II, Libya, Syria, Yemen. All of them. But now you can get the ebook, All the War Lies, by me for free. Just sign up for the email list at the bottom of the page at scotthorton.org or go to scotthorton.org/subscribe. Get All the War Lies by me for free, and then you'll never have to believe them again. So I'm looking at this story linked in the top section of antiwar.com today. As you just mentioned, war on Gaza, Israeli forces target aid workers in string of killings amid imminent famine. So could you please elaborate about that? Are you saying that a bomb dropped somewhere and maybe the Israelis missed and there was some collateral damage and some aid workers were killed? Or does this story really demonstrate that they are targeting and killing aid workers the same way that they've been targeting journalists and their families and aid workers all along here, Kyle?
Yeah, absolutely, Scott. And I mean, you know, it's been a string of attacks. Last week, I wrote a story for antiwar.com. Five people, including one UNRWA worker, was killed when Israel intentionally hit a food distribution center in Rafah, saying that, oh, we thought there was somebody from Hamas there. And then these attacks in the north, though, are actually targeted at the people that they killed, including a police commander. Middle East Eye has this all written up. And the police in Gaza, again, are very important here for making sure that the aid is able to get distributed around the strip. If the police are there, they could escort the aid. But if not, it's getting mobbed and also attacked by the Israeli forces. And, you know, these are just, you know, little stories that we have here and there, Scott. But over the past 5.5 months now, the WHO reports over 400 attacks on medical facilities and over, I think, close to 700 casualties among medical personnel in Gaza. And this is something that the doctors on that panel described. In fact, Dr. Maynard described a situation where he was told by the victim of this that a surgeon was in an operating theater operating, and an Israeli quadcopter drone, so a fairly small drone, entered the theater and shot him. And so he survived. He didn't die. It didn't kill him. But they actually shot a surgeon providing surgery. And with a drone. So this is like the most dystopian thing going on in Gaza. And it's all underwritten by the U.S.
And give us the latest breakdown of the numbers of killed here. I read in the Wall Street Journal, I think, that they killed a Hamas commander. Hey, guys, we got the number 3 guy. This is the first time that they bothered to claim that they even got a single important Hamas commander after 5 months of this genocide.
There was one time early in the war where they did say they had taken out three of the five top Hamas commanders, and then that was widely dismissed pretty quickly. And so this does seem to be maybe one time where they actually were able to kill somebody high ranking in Hamas. But in order to do that, they have slaughtered tens of thousands of people, Scott. And the official numbers from the Gaza Health Ministry is now about 32,000. UNICEF says 13,000 children have been killed, but these are undercounts. And so it's getting to the point where I'm almost hesitant to use those numbers because, you know, it is important because they are official numbers and official death tolls. But, you know, thousands of people are missing. And now we see Israel just bulldozing large swaths of the Gaza Strip with absolutely no care about if their bodies anywhere, people who will never be counted. And so it may be that we really don't understand the true devastation of this war for many, many years to come. And so that 32,000 number is there, but that number is far higher. I'm not sure how high, but thousands, if not tens of thousands.
Yeah, the fact of just bulldozing all those bodies away like that, all those people buried alive.
Right. Well, you know, a couple things I want to add there, Scott. On the numbers, they cite 70,000 people wounded. And I had imagined that this had to be a massive undercount, seeing how there are people dying on the floors of hospitals. So my guess is if you have a concussion or, you know, really anything short of maybe a broken lower limb, a serious laceration or something like that, you're probably not bothering going to the hospital or getting counted. And one of the doctors explained that about half of those people, half of those wounds are moderate to severe, which means they're going to be a lifelong disability. So, you know, that 70,000, that's a lot of very serious wounds. That's thousands and thousands, not tens of thousands, of amputations or, you know, serious burns, you know, people having no skin over large parts of their body that the healthcare system is now trying to deal with. And we had the Israelis time and time again raiding these hospitals and shutting them down as the Palestinians are doing their best to care for the people there. You know, one other thing I should bring up here, Sky, is that the doctors did bring up the resilience of the Palestinian people. And I have read that the people of Gaza in particular are not only trained to provide healthcare, but trained to train other people how to tend to people in emergency situations. And so they've been able to get a lot of volunteers into these medical facilities. And even after the Israelis come and raid everything and shut it down, they're able to get them back up and running to some extent and provide some limited amount of care to people just because of the resilience of the Palestinian system.
It's Anti-War Radio. Thank you very much for your time. That's Kyle Anzalone. He's news editor at the Institute and opinion editor at antiwar.com. Appreciate you, man.
Absolutely, Scott. Thanks for having me.
All right. And listen, you guys, I am spending all week long, every week, writing a history book about the new Cold War with Russia here. But I want you to know you can rely on all of my guys at antiwar.com and at libertarianinstitute.org. That's Dave DeCamp, Jason Ditz, Kyle Anzalone, Will Porter, Connor Freeman, and the rest of the crew there taking care of all of Israel-Palestine and, of course, Eastern Europe and the Pacific and everything else for you there. And that's it for Anti-War Radio for today. I'm your host, Scott Horton. Find the full interview archive, more than 6,000 of them now, going back to 2003 at scotthorton.org. And I am here every Thursday from 2:30 to 3 on KPFK, 90.7 FM in LA. See you next week.